going to talk about the application of human rights framework and what human rights can add when we think about the scope of maternal mortality in the world and health policies in developing countries aimed at reducing maternal mortality. And in particular, how it might help us convert what we know to be the key interventions that are necessary to reduce the number of maternal deaths into claims of political entitlement. My remarks are going to be based on work I did with Physicians for Human Rights in Peru. Peru, for many of you probably know this, is a country in South America. It's a country of dramatic disparities. In the region of the world with the greatest inequalities in income, Peru stands out for its social inequities and for the paltry amount of money that it devotes to social services and social spending, including health spending. It has a high indigenous population, and indigenous people are disproportionately represented among the rural poor. Maternal mortality, it's the second highest maternal mortality ratio in South America after Bolivia, and disparities in maternal mortality speak to broad trends about the country. That is, patterns of maternal mortality very much reflect those underlying fissures in society, disparities between rural and urban populations, discrimination inequities along racial and ethnic lines, as well as underlying gender inequalities in society. What we did with Physicians for Human Rights was just try to humanize this subject of maternal mortality that so often is reduced to statistics and technical language. So we identified cases of women who had died from pregnancy-related complications, women who had died in health facilities, women who had died at home, women who had died in childbirth, women who had died from abortion complications, and we told their stories and the impact that their deaths had had on their families and their communities. But critically, we also traced back the paths that led to their deaths. So the decisions that were taken at the household level, the community level, at the level of the health center, at the level of the regional government, at the level of the national government, and even at the level of the World Bank and the Inter-American Development Bank, that are currently actively engaged in health sector restructuring with a focus on the reduction of maternal mortality. So what I want to do is share one of those stories and talk about what a human rights framework adds. Francisca met her husband, Amancio, when they were just children in Ayacucho, in a district of Ayacucho called Huanta, which is probably the epicenter of where the Shining Path violence took place. They fled Ayacucho to neighboring Huancavelica, which was also very dramatically affected by the violence, but they somehow felt safer there. And they bought this tiny patch of land, and it really is no more than what is shown in this slide. Far too little to cultivate crops on, so Amancio was forced to drive a mototaxi in the nearby town of Pampas. This was Francisca's fourth pregnancy. She had three children, one of whom had been born at home, the other two had been born at a health center. As far as she knew, all the other pregnancies had been normal. As far as she knew, that this pregnancy was normal, although later prenatal records showed that she did have high blood pressure. One day, very close to her due date, Amancio came home from driving his mototaxi to find that Francisca was very, very ill, that she was complaining of severe headaches and nausea, was somewhat disoriented, and was obviously very poorly off. He immediately took her to the health center in neighboring Pampas. And they, unlike so many people, hopefully go backwards. Well, unlike so many stories of maternal deaths, they did not live in a remote, far away area. Their house was right on that road that is shown in the first slide. So they just walked from their little parcel, this little road, onto that road and walked into the town of Bumpus, which would have been a 30-35 minute walk normally, but because Francisco was in such bad shape, took them about 2 hours. They made it to the health center in Bumpus and were attended by the doctor on duty, who was a young doctor who was doing his rural residence. He took Francisco's blood pressure, found it to be very high. This is fine. Took it to be very high and gave her an antihypertensive medication injection. He did not, we don't know whether he examined her any further for signs of preeclampsia. He did not administer magnesium sulfate. He then returned to the on-call room where his girlfriend was visiting and spent the rest of the night with his girlfriend in the on-call room, not checking on Francisca again until she went into labor. There was one nurse on duty in the health center that night who occasionally monitored Francisca but was annoyed by Amancio calling her attention as he thought that his wife was getting worse. And spoke down to them and yelled at them. Francisca then did go into labor. She delivered a stillborn child at about 3 in the morning and had some kind of cerebrovascular incident from what we know from the postmortem investigation records. She appears to have gone into convulsions and had a stroke. She was left completely unresponsive, essentially brain dead. Then a few hours then transpired when there was a shift. New doctors came on, and they decided that it would be prudent to transfer her to a hospital. This was after she was already brain dead. They told Amancio to the hospitals, the health center, which is a cabeza de micorred, or a reference center for that area, did not have a functioning ambulance, or it didn't have an ambulance that they thought could make it all the way to the hospital. So they told Amancio to go into town and find somebody privately who could take him, and they didn't offer him any money. Well, Amancio, being a pauper, couldn't find anybody who was willing to drive all that way for no remuneration. So he came back and said that he couldn't find anybody. Francisca died a few hours later, was declared dead. So the question is, what does a human rights perspective add to this story? Well, we know from public health that the overwhelming majority of maternal deaths are caused by three deadly delays: the delay in the decision to seek care, the delay in arriving at care, and the delay in receiving appropriate treatment once at a health care facility. We know from human rights that health facilities, goods, and services are to be made available, accessible, both geographically and economically, that is, affordable, acceptable, and of adequate quality. Well, the lack of availability, accessibility, acceptability, and quality directly influences these three deadly delays. The social status of women is also a factor in the lack of priority given to emergency obstetric care, as well as in who gets to make the decisions on when to seek care. And human rights has evolved quite considerably in this specific area over recent years. So it has something to say not just about autonomy questions, about, say, laws and policies that are overly restrictive about abortion, but also about programmatic interventions and access to care. So in general comment number 14, for example, the Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights Committee states that the provision of essential obstetric services constitutes a basic obligation on the part of states' parties such as Peru, a core obligation that the government has the burden of proof in showing it's devoting the maximum extent of its available resources to. CEDAW, similarly, the treaty that monitors the Women's Convention, advises states' parties to ensure women's right to safe motherhood and emergency obstetric services. And we can go even further in infusing substantive meaning into these normative obligations. We have these UN guidelines on monitoring the use and availability of essential obstetric services that were jointly issued by the WHO, UNICEF, and UNFPA, and now there's going to be a second iteration of them forthcoming that calls it emergency obstetric services, that actually defines signal functions of what emergency obstetric care constitutes and sets minimum levels per population. So what does this mean? Well, It means we know what causes these deaths. Francisca's death and the over 500,000 other deaths are not random biological events, but predictable results of systematic policy decisions at local, national, and international levels. So it's not just bad health policy to avoid focusing centrally on available, accessible, acceptable, and quality emergency obstetric care. It's inconsistent with a government's obligations under international human rights law. So, for example, when I met in April with the Vice Minister of Health of Peru, and he told me that under the second tranche of the World Bank IDB health sector restructuring, they were not going to focus on the health system so much, but they were planning to focus on other community-based interventions. That is inappropriate. That is not a matter of politicized criteria or political whim. That is inappropriate according to the best evidence from public health and according to international human rights obligations. Human rights, in addition to underscoring the primacy of emergency obstetric care, also sets out these characteristics, these principles that can guide, can inform health policy making and in how we go about building and strengthening health systems. So, for example, non-retrogression and adequate progress. Well, non-retrogression means, it's a legal way of saying no backsliding. So if you have a family planning program, as Peru did, you can't, as Minister of Health, decide to dismantle that family planning program because you belong to a Catholic religious sect that is opposed to contraception. Similar, meaningful participation. Human rights is about the process through which we provide the services as much as the delivery of specific goods or services themselves. It's about creating agents that have a say in their healthcare policies and decisions. And then these other three, non-discrimination and equality within and beyond the health system, accountability and international assistance and cooperation, I want to go to in a little bit more depth because I think there are some misconceptions about what human rights has to say in this regard. So non-discrimination and equality are core principles that define a human rights-based approach. But many people think that human rights only relates to the individual level, so the individual healthcare professional who discriminates against the individual patient. And that certainly is at play in many of the cases we see. It was at play here. Amancio felt mistreated by the nurse at the facility. He felt disparaged and treated badly because he was indigenous. But there are also, importantly, other dimensions of non-discrimination that human rights has something to say about. So there are institutional levels of discrimination. Why did no one at this Pampas Healthcare Center speak Quechua? So they couldn't talk to Francisca. They couldn't hear, actually, what her full set of symptoms was or hear her describe them. That is a barrier to accessible and quality healthcare. Similarly, there are systemic or structural forms of discrimination, structural inequalities that result in de facto discrimination. So under international law, we don't need deliberate or de jure legal discrimination. We just need to have the effect of nullifying or impairing the exercise or equal enjoyment of these rights. And in Peru, not only does it dedicate an incredibly small portion of its national budget to health, 4.8%, 0.9% of GDP, which has actually declined over the last 5 years despite rapid economic growth, the monies that it allocates are incredibly inequitably allocated. So over on the first column, Huancavelica, where you have over 90% of the population with unmet basic needs, per capita, those people are receiving a fraction of what people in Moquegua, Ica, Arequipa, or Tacna are receiving. Lima is a little bit of a different story because of a lot of other confounding factors. And it turns out that the populations with the squiggly line of what they're getting below the line of unmet basic needs are the places where they have the highest indigenous populations. And the populations where they're getting more money and have fewer unmet basic needs have low indigenous populations. So what does that translate into? Well, it translates into a very fewer of the interventions that are necessary to save women's lives, among other things. So you see 21% of births attended by skilled health professionals in Huancavelica, the lowest in the country. Accountability. Accountability is perhaps the core principle of a human rights-based approach. It is what sets human rights apart from so many other approaches, which are entirely also interested in seeing health within a framework, a larger framework of social justice. Human rights establishes and mobilizes this normative framework for accountability. But accountability of whom, for what? So often we think of accountability relating to human rights as accountability of individual perpetrators. And certainly in this case, there is that. There's a sense of impunity. In fact, in this case, I omitted to tell you that because Amansu had been unable to locate transportation who would take them for free to Huancayo, which is in Junin, that was deemed in the administrative investigation that followed Francisca's death to exonerate all of the health professionals in this health post from any responsibility. It was taken as a reluctance on the part of family members, not an inability, but a reluctance to transfer. So let's look at the individual errors and see really what's behind them. So certainly there was a failure to recognize and immediately treat Francisca's preeclampsia so it wouldn't progress to eclampsia, right? The administration of nifedipine instead of magnesium sulfate, which is globally recognized to be the medication of choice in a case of preeclampsia. But it turns out, and I'm not excusing any of the callous indifference exhibited by the health professionals at this health center, but it turns out that at the time of Francisca's death, magnesium sulfate was not included in the social insurance scheme's protocol in Peru, which means that the health center is not reimbursed for administering magnesium sulfate, which is a pretty strong disincentive for its use. And second of all, even if mag sulfate had been on the protocol, which it now is, there was only one nurse there. It's unclear whether she had the training to monitor and administer that magnesium sulfate, but she was attending to the entire health facility. And magnesium sulfate is not a simple thing to administer. It's not like antibiotics or oxytocin. It does require constant monitoring of urine output, vital signs, etc. And this understaffing is a decision that comes from the regional government of Huancavelica and the national government. That's not something that the health center makes the decision about. So what about the failure to make a timely transfer? Well, that seems pretty egregious, too, because you know, the protocol is, if a woman is full term, deliver the baby if she's having preeclampsia. Well, it turns out that, as you saw, the ambulance at this facility was not in condition to make it all the way to Huancayo in Junin, which is all too typical in Peru, that there are ambulances that are broken down or non-functional, that there are no budgets for vehicles for maintenance or repair or fuel, but also, again, going back to policies that emerge from the central government level, the social insurance scheme reimburses 90 soles for transfer, which might be okay from the outside of Lima to a facility in Lima, but to get this woman to Huancayo would have been at least 500 or 600 soles. And it would have required crossing departmental lines, provincial lines, for which the social insurance scheme does not reimburse. So the health center was unwilling to give out its own money to Amancio to help him get his wife to the hospital. Well, what about that late attempt at transfer after she was already brain dead? Well, in Peru, it's very common for people who are associated or health centers that are associated with maternal deaths to be chastised, and individuals to be fired summarily, and health centers to be have funds or other things withheld from them. So this health center naturally wanted to get rid of her, knew she was moribund, and wanted to get rid of her so it would be recorded, checked up against the hospital and not against them. And in fact, their attempted transfer, which wasn't a real transfer, was used to exonerate them. So accountability cannot mean this focus on individuals. It has to really look at institutional and systemic considerations, because otherwise we're really undermining truly sustainable policies to address safe motherhood. So really quickly, international assistance and cooperation. Human rights is too often thought to be just about the obligations of the state. The obligations of the state in the developing world, states cannot realize rights to safe motherhood and strengthen their health systems without help from donor governments. Human rights has something to say about this, an explicit language in the instrument. MDG 8 explicitly puts out a global partnership for development, which calls for donor states to step up for their obligations if they want the other development countries to meet the first 7 MDGs. And Peru, for example, even though Peru is much better off than many other countries, is a middle-income country, and it may not be as fanciful to think that it could step up more than other sub-Saharan African countries, spends 4 times as much annually on debt service as it does on its health sector. So the maximum available resources that I talked about needing to be devoted under human rights law to essential obstetric services are radically limited if we're limiting it to the crumbs that are left over after Peru pays its debt service. So in conclusion, the lack of available, accessible, acceptable, and quality emergency obstetric care is a primary way in which women like Francisca experience poverty and exclusion in the developing world. Maternal mortality provides this kind of social x-ray that in Peru illuminates the interactions among rural poverty and gender inequality and racial and ethnic discrimination. And importantly, I think the MDG Task Force on Child and Maternal Health really emphasized that health claims, claims of entitlement to care and to the underlying preconditions of care, are assets of citizenship. Well, in Peru, it's pretty clear that rural campesina women are not treated as full citizens in society. But I think that taking this kind of human rights approach, which emphasizes the primacy of emergency obstetric care as part of strengthening the overall health system, and draws on these broader principles that link health with democratic governance and substantive equality, really can contribute to promoting democracy, a functional democracy in that country.